At Byers Volkswagen, we've been family-owned since 1897, built on trust, driven by innovation. And now, buying your next Volkswagen is easier than ever. Shop online, customize your deal, and finalize everything from home. Just stop by to pick up the keys. It's that simple.
Drive home a new 2026 Volkswagen Tiguan S for $286 for 36 months with $2,499 due at signing.
The next generation shops online, and we're driving with them at ColumbusVolkswagen.com or visit us by the airport.
See dealer for details. Offer ends 4/30/2026.
0141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Scotland get off to a winning start in Euro 2024 qualifying. It's Spain up next at Hampden tomorrow night, and Lauren Shankland has replaced Shea Adams in the Scotland squad. I'm Andrew McLean. Joining me in the studio tonight is Andy Halliday and Hugh Keevans.
Andy Halliday wasn't even born the last time Scotland beat Spain in a fully competitive match. World Cup qualifier 1984, two goals for Mo Johnson, one for King Kenny Dalglish. But now it's about today and today's players. And chasing King Kenny Dalglish is John McGinn, 53 caps, 28 years old, 16 goals, and more than halfway towards Kenny Dalglish's record shared with the one and only Dennis Law.
Steve Clark celebrated his new contract extension with a lovely little win. First time Scotland have opened up with a Euro qualifying campaign victory since 2006, and I don't think they came more comfortable. Hugh just mentioned the game in 1984. That was the year where Hugh celebrated his 50th birthday. So
yeah, it was,
congratulations,
yeah.
Hugh.
Nice day it was too.
Yeah, well, I think we're right in the sweet spot at the moment because we've got Saturday's game to reflect on. Of course, that 3-0 win against Cyprus. So if you've got any thoughts on that, we want to hear from you. 0141 951 1025. However, there is also a big game tomorrow, the second game of this qualifying campaign, and it is the little task of welcoming Spain to Hampden, Hugh.
Well, listen, I think every now and then, if you're a Scotland, you need a statement result. You need something that lifts the entire nation and makes them say, wow, didn't see that coming. The last one I can remember, Thierry Henry and the French, 2006, victory for Scotland. That's what you're in the market for tomorrow.
Yeah, it's going to be quite a different game from the one on Saturday.
Yeah, as I mean, Spain ranked 10th in the world, always known as one of the top nations. But I don't know, I've got a sneaky feeling. I think it's been a long time since we've had one of these short results. I feel as if Spain themselves are in that little bit of a transition period. I think their squad's a lot different to the one that went to the World Cup. But don't get me wrong, it's going to be a tough task, and certainly needs some slight improvements in the victory against Cyprus.
They didn't have a great World Cup, did they?
No.
Put out by Morocco. We beat Morocco, I think.
Well, I don't know.
They looked pretty good at the World Cup.
I don't know.
Anyway, let's hear from you at home. 0141 951 1025. Whatever is on your mind, phone in, let us know. 0141 951 1025. I know that, you know, international football isn't everyone's cup of tea, so maybe you've got a point on domestic football as well. We'd like to hear from you too. 0141 951 1025. While you get your calls in, let's go for the Monday awards. I think there's sort of slimmer pickings than normal just due to the sort of lack of games, Hugh. But let's start with result of the weekend.
This is a game of the people, for the people. Therefore, I'm going for the team bottom of the championship, who won their first trophy for 30 years yesterday, Hamilton Accies beating Raith Rovers in the Challenge Cup final. That'll do me.
Yeah, big result for the Accies. We might even hear from John Rankin later on that one. Andy, result of the weekend?
I mean, I've got to go Scotland, and I think any chance you get, you've got to take your home nation. And listen, like I said, it's the first winning start since 2006, and yep, it's against the lowest ranked team in the group. But no, listen, 3-0 victory is comfortable as it gets for me.
Goal of the weekend, Hugh?
Well, if you score the goal that wins your club their first trophy for three decades, I don't care what it looked like, Regan Tumulty, Hamilton Accies goal scorer, that's my man.
Yeah, big, big goal, Andy.
I don't get a lot of opportunities to have a wee slide dig at Celtic these days, so I'm going Steven Gerrard's penalty. I thought the way he tucked it right into the bottom corner was magnificent. And like I says, I don't get a lot of chances, so I've got to try and take it when I can.
Yeah, that good one. Good to create at your house, have you?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
That one went down. Well, I haven't seen anything about it on social media over
the past few days.
No,
nothing at all.
No, nothing. Howler of the weekend, Hugh.
I'm going for the Hampden pitch. It when John McGinn says it's just unsuitable, we have a double header coming up 29th and 30th of April. Falkirk will play Inverness Cali Thistle in the first Scottish Cup final, and then Celtic and Rangers will have to play the following day on a pitch that will have been cut up like nobody's business 24 hours earlier. I can hear the screaming match already.
Howler of the weekend, Andy.
I do like Hughes, I've got to be fair, but he's nabbed it in front of me. So I'm actually going to go the referee in the Scotland game. I'm going to stick to a little bit of a players' union. I hated his decision to send the boy off in the 95th minute. And I know, was it the benefit of Scotland? It was 3-0, it was the 95th minute. But to give a second booking for kicking the ball away in the 95th minute when Scotland are just about to confirm their 3-0 victory, I hated it.
Performer of the weekend, Hugh, who was your star man?
I'm going for McGinn. Has to be, it's a halfway towards, more than halfway towards the record held jointly by Kenny Dalglish and Dennis Law. He's 28. We play an awful lot of international football these days. He must have an outside chance of hitting the 30 mark.
Andy?
I'll go his midfield partner, Callum McGregor, obviously reaching his 50 caps for Scotland. And I thought there was a number of a good performance on the day. I thought the midfield three all gelled really well. Obviously Scott McTominay coming off the bench and making a huge impact, but for me I thought Callum McGregor was the standout performer on his 50th cap.
Well, maybe one of these topics is what you want to talk about. 01419511025. Let's hear from you. Let's go straight to the phones actually, because Ken is in Cambus Lang. Ken, what did you make of the Scotland game on Saturday, first of all?
Well, before I go into the game, can I just ask Andy Halliday a quick question?
I wonder what this is going to be.
Was picking Callum McGregor there your way of trying to appease the Celtic fans after the comment about Gerrard's penalty?
Yeah, that was what you call tongue in cheek, Ken.
I gathered that. Anyway, I thoroughly enjoyed the game on Saturday. Although, I mean, I agree with Andy with the referee, but also those three kicks he didn't give against for Scotland because they were played as far as I was concerned. But I enjoyed the game. Really looking forward to the game tomorrow night. I think we've gone the jury still out. He only had like two saves to make in that game on Saturday. He'll be really tested on Tuesday. And in that respect, I would put on Scott McTominay ahead of, say, Ryan Jack. I think Scott McTominay has proved in the past, when he's played in defence, that he's good there. And if he has to drop back, because Spain will attack more. That's a given, they'll attack more. And Lyndon Dykes, he'll probably play up in front of his own. That's what my thoughts will be for Tuesday.
Yeah, just over 24 hours until the game, Hugh. People will start picking their own team and their squad selection. Steve Clarke, I'm sure, will probably have a clear idea at this point in his head of who he's going to pick. If we go through what Ken said there, he started with Angus Gunn. I think it would be a surprise to anyone, really, if he decided to change his goalkeeper going into this game. But this is a very different test for Angus Gunn, who pretty much had nothing to do on his debut.
But it'd be an even bigger test of Xander Clarke or Liam Kelly to make their international debut against Spain. Friday night's programme, I was on here with Kenny Miller, and the number of people who said, if they don't get a regular game for their club, they shouldn't be in the team. And now Scott McTominay has disproved that theory, and many players did. Kieran Tierney, outstanding. Stuart Armstrong had a very good first half. Players who don't get a regular game, so that one has been thrown out the window. I'd be reluctant to tweak McGregor and Jack. Why, you know, they've done so well, why tweak it now? I'd leave
I suppose
them.
Ken's just seen the impact that McTominay had when he came off the bench, scored a couple of goals, offered something different, but of course, you know, Cyprus were playing differently at that point as well. They were more open at that point.
Spain offer something far different from Cyprus, who were very moderate opposition. I'm not against McTominay coming in from the start, but I'd leave Jack and McGregor where they are.
What do you think, Andy? How is that midfield going to set up? Because it's going to be a key area against a Spain team that are going to want to try and pass Scotland off the park.
Yeah, it's difficult. I don't think Steve Clarke will have huge headache selections going into the game, because I do think, you know, 9 or 10 of the starting 11 pretty much picks itself, especially after the Cyprus game. But I thought the balance between McGregor, McGinn and Ryan Jack was really, really good. And I think Ken's right to bring up McTominay. I actually thought the impact of Ryan Christie and Lyndon Dykes coming off the bench as well, I thought they made a real positive impact coming onto the pitch. But I just think the balance between Ryan Jack and Callum McGregor worked very, very well. And of course, you know, I think Steve Clarke mentioned at his press conference that Scotland are going to have to be very patient without the ball, but need to be really positive in it as well. And I think that's one thing that I thought Ryan Jack and Callum McGregor done very, very well in the first half. I thought they showed composure when they had to, but I thought both of them were more than willing to drive into the box, make third man runs, running behind and try and penetrate when they can as well. So I wouldn't be disappointed to see the same 11, except from obviously Lyndon Dykes coming in for Che Adams, but I also wouldn't be surprised either to see Scott McTominay come in.
Yeah, Ken, is that just a straightforward one in terms of Lyndon Dykes coming in for Che Adams? Is there a change of shape up there at all? Of course, it was Armstrong and McGinn were the two that were supporting Adams at the weekend. With Adams out, would you just see it a straight swap for Dykes, yeah?
Yeah, a straight swap. But can I just say, when I was talking about Scott McTominay, I mean, Hugh was saying about him going forward, scoring those goals. I was meaning from a defensive side, because Spain will attack more. And I just think McTominay is more defensive-minded than Ryan Jack is, you know. So it wasn't anything against Ryan Jack's pushing forward or anything.
I just think Andy used the word balance, and that's important. I think at the back of his mind, Steve Clark would be in agreement with Andy that that's important. And you've got McGinn, McGregor, Jack where they ought to be. I think defensively there's not a lot wrong with us, and it was a tremendous show of strength and depth for a change when we lost Aaron Hickey and replaced him with Nathan Patterson. You know, you're talking about players who, Serie A, now both in the English Premier League. So I think defensively we're looking okay.
It was something that Tamura Kitzbaya, the Cyprus manager, actually pointed out post-match. He said, look, Scotland have the quality to have a Manchester United midfielder on the bench to be able to come off and make an impact, and it does show the options that Steve Clark has at his disposal.
Yeah, definitely. I've said it for the last sort of couple of seasons, to be honest. I think it's as strong a Scotland squad as I can remember. And listen, Lewis Ferguson, the amount of plaudits he's had in Serie A this year, another one that's not, I don't even think he's made a cap yet, or if he has, it's only one or two. Josh Doyle's getting a lot of praise in Serie A as well, can't make the squad. I think we've got a lot of strength and depth in a lot of positions. If you're looking at the sort of negative side, the one thing I've always said is I just don't think we have that one world-class talisman, that one attacker like Gareth Bale's been for Wales, Ryan Giggs, like Robbie Keane's been for Ireland. But to be fair, John McGinn's fast becoming that man, because you know, 22 goal involvements since Steve Clark got the job. And you know, it's quite funny because you read that he's not scored a goal for 48 games for Aston Villa, but when he seems to pull in that blue of Scotland, he just turns into a different player.
Yeah, Ken, what about the impact of John McGinn? Another goal for him, he's now up to 16 for Scotland.
Oh, I mean, that guy, I think by the time he ends, he's going to be only near 40 probably. You know, he's just, you know, If he was missing, then the Scotland fans would be worried, I think, you know. But him playing the way he is, the sky's the limit as far as Scotland fans are concerned. I mean, a victory against Spain with him scoring at least one goal is, I don't think, an impossible dream.
I'm not going to stand here and tell Unai Emery how to do his job, but are you maybe surprised that John McGinn hasn't played a more sort of attacking role at club level, just given how well it's worked under Steve Clark?
Yeah, more advanced. I actually think he has a couple of times recently, and I think they've actually been talking about a sort of upturn in his performances. Not quite added the goals to domestic football like he has for his country, but listen, he's a player that's been down to the English Premier League straight from Hibs and performed very, very well in the Championship, getting them straight promoted into the Premier League. I think he got Player of the Year in his first season in the Premier League as well. So he's been a fantastic player and a fantastic servant for Scotland. I think you always look at the sort of talisman for the national side. I think James McFadden was that for a number of years. And I think John McGinn's fast becoming everyone's fans' favourite for the national team.
Yeah, I think the stats back it up, Hugh. I said a stat at half-time, which has slightly changed because of what happened in the second half. But under Steve Clark, no Scotland player has made more appearances for the national team under him, scored more goals, or at that point provided more assists, but he's now been overtaken by Andy Robertson after the second half. But when you talk about talisman, the word that Andy used there, that is just John McGinn for the Scotland side.
Yeah, you know, you can't have a side without him being in it. You know, as long as he's fit and healthy, then he's written down by the manager, the first name on the list. Can't be any other way. You've got 16 goals. It's amazing that Dennis Law, who, you know, stopped playing football nearly 50 years ago, and Kenny Dalglish, who stopped playing a long time ago as well, they're still there, record holders of the goal scoring, 30 goals, the pair of them. But John McGinn has an outside chance. He's got 5 good years international football.
Well, in fact, that's 16 goals and 53 caps. So that's basically a goal every 3 games anyway. So who knows? Like you said, I think he's only 28. So you'd like to think he's still got another sort of 5-6 years at the top level in Scotland's national team. So I've no doubt that he's seen that and he's got one eye in that in the back of his head. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Yeah, well, time will tell. We'll see how John McGinn gets on the goal scoring chart. Certainly not bad at the moment. Thank you to Ken, 01419511025. Let's hear from you, whether it's reflecting on that win against Cyprus at the weekend, whether you want to look forward to the game against Spain as well. Let's hear a bit from Steve Clark, actually, just on what he made of that performance on Saturday.
It's been a while since we had a good start in a European qualifying campaign. I think somebody said it was 2006, since the last time we won an opening qualifier. So I've mentioned that. I think it's always good to get off to a fast start. Cyprus is a good team. I know Tamouri. Tamouri Kispaya, their coach. I worked with Tamouri at Newcastle. His teams are always good, well organised. They had a good result. Last friendly game they played, they went to Israel and won 3-2. We know how difficult it is to go there. So we expect a tough game.
That clearly was a clip that was from before the game that I think has been labelled wrong there. Just noticed halfway through. But he was talking there about the fact that getting off to a good start is massive, and Scotland have done that.
Yeah, there's no downside to a 3-0 victory at home that gets you off the mark. However, let's keep a sense of perspective. Cyprus were very modest opposition. I don't think that Spain are anything like the team of 10 years ago. Nothing like. But they will still present far more formidable opposition than Cyprus did. So there'll need to be an upgrade in performance from Scotland.
Yeah, how big in that sort of jump in performance will there need to be from Scotland based on what we saw on Saturday going into tomorrow night?
Yeah, definitely. I thought the first half in particular was as comfortable a Scotland performance as I've seen without being spectacular. I don't really think Cyprus sort of posed any threat, but what I will say is I think you see a lot of what Steve Clark's been working on with the Scotland team and within that game, because although I do think at times they were sort of patient out of possession, they were compact, you could see they would try and trigger on a press out wide. It came for the Aaron Hickey chance. I think it comes for the second goal as well, and I think that's really important going into the Spain game, because I just think if you're going to sit deep and try and frustrate Spain for 90 minutes, I think you're just waiting to lose. I think they do have, although they're not the same side as, you know, the 2012 European champions, they've certainly got a lot of players that can hurt you. So I think Scotland will certainly have to have a clear game plan on how to frustrate at times, but certainly try and make an impact the other end of the field as well.
01419511025. Give us a call now and you could be up next.
You are the voice of Scottish football. Call 01419511025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Andy Halliday and Hugh Keevans here with me, Andrew McLean, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Before the break, we heard from Ken. He had a few ideas of what he wants to see Scotland do against Spain tomorrow night. If you've got some thoughts of your own, 01419511025. I did say before the break we were going to hear what Steve Clark made of the game on Saturday. Let's hear that clip now.
Good start to the group, 3 points. Some good things. And some things that are not so good that we have to get a little bit better at. But overall, very pleasing. Nice to start the group with what looks like a comprehensive home win with a 3-0 scoreline. Let's start with the positive. First 30 minutes I thought were outstanding. I thought the rotation within the pitch, the movement on the pitch on both sides were really good. Robertson, Hickey getting forward, Tierney stepping in for the back, Ryan Portis stepping in for the back. Stuart Armstrong picking up good positions, running with the ball. I thought we were really good for 30 minutes, and then I just felt we got a little bit sloppy, a little bit casual, maybe on the pitch. And I said to them at half time, maybe you feel it's too easy, but it's not, because the scoreline says it's not. And second half was just about trying to pick up the momentum we had in the first 30, and maybe it took us a little bit longer to do that than we should, because you're always looking for the second goal in a game like that, because you know the second goal can. Is probably the crucial goal.
I mean, Steve Clark could have ended it there and said, you know, 3-0, three goals, didn't concede, very happy with it. But he goes on to mention a few things that he thinks they can do better, which is just showing that, you know, he's always striving for more.
And so he should. Any manager should. Scotland beat Cyprus 3-0. Spain beat Norway 3-0. We're on top of Group A on alphabetical order. Now we have to be word perfect against the Spaniards tomorrow. Much room for improvement, but very talented players within our squad. It promises to be quite the occasion.
Let's go back to the phones. 01419511025. That's the number Simon in Kilmarnock has dialed. Simon, what are you thinking tonight?
Hi guys, hope you're all well.
You too.
I really enjoyed the game actually on Saturday. It was a bit of a weird atmosphere. Andrew, you were there. You might know that yourself. I don't know, to be honest, whether that's down to the, you know, only having a few hours of pub time before the game, or whether it was the, you know, the actual game itself. But I've never really felt that was really comfortable. I can't remember a time being at Hampden watching Scotland where I didn't really feel that Cyprus were going to offer anything really. And I thought the overall performance was just, we just did what we needed to do to get the 3 points. And when you look at other results that happened over the weekend, Denmark losing to Kazakhstan, you know, it just shows you there's no easy games in international football, certainly no easy games at this kind of level. And, you know, to get the 3-0 result and to get the 3 points on the board was the most important thing going into tomorrow.
Yeah, I think, as you say, Simon, I was there as well. There were parts where it maybe felt a bit flat inside Hampden. Sometimes what's happening in the stands is a sort of reflection of what's happening on the pitch. Maybe it was just a case, Andy, that, you know, after the first half hour where Scotland was good, they didn't quite kick on at that point until the two late goals at the end.
Yeah, and I think it probably coincides with, well, like Simon says, that it was that comfortable for periods of the game. And I think, well, Steve Clark's assessment of the game was pretty fair. You know, certainly from what I watched, I thought it was pretty spot on. I think he's maybe been slightly harsh in terms of the first 30 minutes, because I thought the first 45 as a whole, to be honest, was really comfortable. I never felt at any time Cyprus were going to get a goal to come back at the come back into the game. But listen, he's spot on. As comfortable it may have seen, 1-0 is never a comfortable scoreline in football. So it wasn't really until the introduction of Ryan Christie, Scott McTominay, Lyndon Dykes, obviously the latter two playing huge parts in creating the second goal for Scott McTominay, and then obviously at the end it's a comprehensive scoreline. But what I will say is, you know, Angus Gunn in Scotland are going to have plenty busier nights, and I think it's going to start tomorrow night against Spain.
Yeah, I think it just proves how comfortable it was for Scotland. I think Angus Gunn had two saves to make, and they were both comfortable saves as well. One was in the first half, a left footed shot that went straight towards him. Later in the game, it was about 85 minutes, there was a deflected shot that he had to go down to his left to get, but that just really shows that Scotland weren't bothered by Cyprus at all.
I think if you're not firing on all cylinders and the opposition is decidedly average, it can have the effect of deadening the atmosphere. I don't like football in broad daylight anyway. I like football under the floodlights with the drama that brings. And tomorrow, Simon will be there among the crowd, I am certain. It's Spain. It's the kind of name that if you beat them, the country has the feel-good factor, and the floodlights will be on. So it'll be a different matter tomorrow.
Cyprus were one of the tougher teams to get in that pot, but no matter whether it's a bottom or side from the bottom pot, the international football landscape has changed quite a bit, that teams that are way down lower in the rankings do make it a lot tougher to play against now than they maybe used to.
Yeah, and I think, you know, even touching on when we played San Marino in the, was it the Nations League, that, you know, I don't think San Marino are quite the international side that they were 10-15 years ago, where they couldn't pick up a point from anywhere unless it was against Scotland. I think it was 2002. That was the Faroe Islands. So I do think that international as a whole has improved, but I think as well, looking at it into perspective, when Steve Clark, you know, takes over the job in Nations League C, and I watched much drabber performances than I watched on Saturday, for as comfortable and comprehensive as it was. So I think we're in a good place at the moment.
Yeah, but we're not in a position to look down our noses at a 3-0 home win. But just keep a sense of perspective. There were good parts of our game, there were average parts of our game, but it came under the job done category. And now tomorrow, you can measure yourself against one of the European elite.
Simon, moving on to tomorrow, have you got any thoughts in terms of team selection?
Yeah, absolutely. Just before I go into that, the actual team selection, I just want to say thanks to SFA, who released a few extra tickets, a couple of handful of tickets today, because I managed to get two extra ones, and my gran, she's almost turning 80, and she's not felt comfortable going enough to the football yet since COVID. She's a big Scotland fan, so managed to give my ticket to my mates who've happily taken them, and I'm going to get to sit with my gran at the football tomorrow. She's the one who used to take me to Scotland games when I was younger, so it'll be a real special moment tomorrow. So hopefully she's not listening, because that'll just ruin our surprise. But
In terms don't of worry, the, Simon, we won't tell anyone. It's fine.
No, it's fine. In terms of the game tomorrow, I think Ryan Jack will come out. He was fine at kind of ball winning on Saturday, but had a look at the stats after the game and he had the worst passing percentage or accuracy in the Scotland team. We don't need that on tomorrow. We need somebody who's going to keep the ball better. He doesn't get into the positions for me that McTominay does get the two goals late on either. So I think McTominay comes in for him. I think that's a pretty easy decision. I think Christie will come in for Armstrong. I would like to try and see a place in for Billy Gilmore, but I'm not sure how you do that in the midfield. You're certainly not going to drop McGinn or McGregor. And up front, actually, there's a little bit of me that thinks he might throw a bit of a wild card and put Jacob Brown in, who's a bit faster, a bit more pace over the top, as a maybe a better out ball to try and, you know, get that ball over the top, because Spain play with a really, really high line. I'm not sure Dykes, if Spain play with that high line tomorrow, whether Dykes will be able to get in behind as well. So I think it might actually be Jacob Brown, but I'm really looking forward to the game, as I say. And I actually think, you know, watching Spain-Norway, neither side really made me, you know, terrified. I wasn't quaking in my boots watching either of them. Spain got a couple of late goals, but, you know, like as we did. But, yeah, just really looking forward to it. I actually think tomorrow could be one of those special Hampden nights, as Hugh says, under lights. And, you know, if there's a man who's going to do it against a bigger team, it's Steve Clarke.
We'll go through those, Andy, in terms of Simon's selections, because he talks about whether it's going to be Jacob Brown or Lyndon Dykes. He said it would maybe be the pace of Jacob Brown. Is there a sort of debate to be had whether, when you're playing against a team like Spain, do you go for the pacey striker up top, or do you go for someone like Lyndon Dykes, who may be able to hold the ball up as a threat at set pieces, which Scotland might need to make the most of?
I think it's a fair argument, but one thing I've noticed with Steve Clarke is he's very, very fair and loyal to the players that have done him well. So I think instead of going for the sort of pace of the direct argument, I think I'll go for the tried and trusted argument. I think Lyndon Dykes has been a mainstay whenever since he's made his international debut for Scotland, and I do firmly believe that he'll be given the nod tomorrow night. I think it's quite possible that Jacob Brown could come on and make an impact if the game is needing somebody to stretch the game a little bit. You know, from the players that Simon did mention about coming in, one that I don't think will happen, and the reason is I really think Stuart Armstrong's legs and ability to run in behind could be a huge, huge asset to Scotland tomorrow night. I think Ryan Christie is a fantastic football player, but I think it's one where, you know, he tries to pick up little pockets of space and sort of play it to in behind to a pacey Jacob Brown, shall we say. But I think Stuart Armstrong's willing legs to run in behind and be that sort of presence out of possession as well is a big reason why I'd give him the nod again tomorrow.
You're discounting the possibility of your own captain, Lauren Shankland, called into the squad?
Well, it's funny because, I was speaking to a couple of friends about this earlier on. I think a big thing is that I've not really seen Jacob Brown play a lot of football, and I get the benefit of playing and training with Shanks every single day. And, you know, although he's not been included in the original squad, I think going into the game tomorrow night, if we are 1-0 down, if we are needing a goal, I know who I'm bringing on out of the two. And, uh-huh. And that's not being biased, because I play with one every single day. But I think it's certainly a positive for Scotland that Shanks is back in the setup. You know, 21 goals for his club this season. I think four caps for Scotland and one goal as well. So I think if there's a goal to be had tomorrow, I wouldn't be surprised to see him come onto the pitch.
Simon talked about the midfield. Does the shape of that midfield change against Spain? Because it was more of a box, really,
yeah,
wasn't it?
With
Jack and McGregor, with McGinn and Armstrong higher up. Does that need to change? Does there maybe need to be a sort of a flatter three with one ahead supporting a striker?
I think it's interesting to see how they set up in that respect, because, you know, to touch on it earlier when Steve Clarke talked about being patient without the ball, which I don't think there's any doubt. I think everyone's expecting that. But, you know, if you do fall back into that flat back five and that flat back four, it then becomes very, very difficult to get up the pitch. And then if you've got a Lyndon Dykes who isn't blessed with, you know, blistering pace running behind, he can become a bit isolated up there as well. So I do think there'll certainly be at least one advanced. I would like to see approach with the same setup, because, you know, listen, of course, Cyprus are a completely different opposition, but I still feel as if the sort of balance out of possession was good. I thought they were compact at times. There was a trigger to press at times as well. And listen, I do think, you know, we should have some type of go. And of course, you've got to be wary of Spain's threats, but being the home side and, you know, with obviously ambitions to get this big result with the 1984 game that Hugh was talking about, I would like to see us take a positive approach.
Well, thank you to Simon. I hope you and your gran enjoy the game tomorrow night.
I hope she's got a warm coat.
I hope so as well, actually. But thank you to you. Let's go back to the phones. 01419511025. David is in West Lothian. David, what's on your mind?
How are you doing, guys? You all right?
Yep.
All good, David?
David. I thought Saturday, you say, was very comfortable. You're right with your analysis. I thought it was really good. We never felt threatened at all. I thought, as you said, the game was that easy with regards to no threat for the set player, sorry, that it did reflect on the stands. I thought the atmosphere was pretty flat and pretty poor. I think tomorrow will be obviously completely different. I'm really looking forward to it. I think it will be a great atmosphere. I think the crowd will be up for it. I think we need to play our part. Absolutely. We need to get behind the team. And I'm looking forward to it. I think, as you say, under the lights, the Spanish coming to town, I just think it could be pretty spot on. It could be excellent. It could be a great night.
Yeah, David talks about the crowd getting behind. I think that just comes more naturally to a crowd, doesn't it, when it's a game under the lights, a big opponent in Spain. You would expect the atmosphere just to be up a notch than it was on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, with the greatest respect, if Ross County, for example, go to Celtic Park or Ibrox, the atmosphere is not the same as Andy Haldy coming with Hearts to Celtic Park or Aberdeen going to Ibrox. It just makes for a better atmosphere tomorrow. It's under the lights. It's a full house. It's one of the European aristocracy, Spain. They might not be the Spain of 10 years ago, but nevertheless, to take their scalp for Stevie Clark at the beginning of this European qualification campaign would be a tremendous result for him. So everything about it points to the atmosphere and the game being far superior to what took place on Saturday.
How much can a crowd help on a night like that?
Massively. I think especially the Tartan Army and what they've brought to Scotland over the years. You know, that one of the best performances I've seen Scotland produce, you know, since my time supporting them was probably the game against Denmark last year. And, you know, Denmark were on a major unbeaten run themselves. Obviously, they were already qualified for the campaign, but it was a huge night for us. And I thought the atmosphere on the day, I don't think when the atmosphere was that much, I don't think they allowed the Scotland players to settle for a minute. You know, I think if Scotland are to be successful tomorrow night, not only does it need a big night from the pitch, but it needs a big night from the stands as well. And listen, there's nothing that gets the crowd going like a good old-fashioned Scotland tackle, and I think there's going to be plenty of opportunities of that tomorrow night.
David, you mentioned that the crowd maybe wasn't as loud as you'd hoped for, but the fact that there was a sellout, a full crowd for a game against Cyprus, you know, the opening qualifier, does that show just how far Steve Clarke has managed to take this team? Seen videos of the last time Scotland played Cyprus and Steve Clarke's first game in charge. There's a lot of empty seats behind the goals. When you see the replays of those, it shows the sort of connection that the Scotland team now have with the supporters.
Absolutely. I think we've got his back at 100%. I think his team selection, there was no sort of, he should be in, he shouldn't be out. He's got his team spot on. Yes, the formation, everybody's sort of thinking, we were defensive against Cyprus. But as you said, there's no easy game, is there? And we've got a 3-0. You're a bit your hand off for a 3-0 at the start of the game, considering the last time we played them. But I think he probably had that formation. That's his favoured one, and he's probably sampled it a wee bit to make sure we're going to be right for tomorrow night as well. I mean, he's probably ensured he's got a balance in there. I don't think there'll be that many changes. Obviously, the forced one up front. But I kind of see that much change. I mean, it surprised me if he still keeps Jack in there as the ball winner. I know a guy before mentioned about his pass rate and all that. I get that. The McTominay came on and made a difference. But I think he's came there. He's got the team together. He's picked his best 11 for Cyprus, probably with the Spanish game being the main thought anyway. So it wouldn't surprise me if the rest of the team stays the same.
Well, thank you to David. If you've got any thoughts on Scotland or on anything else you want to chat about tonight, 01419511025.
01419511025. This is Scottish football's league leader, Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Andy Halliday and Hugh Keevans with me, Andrew McLean, in the studio for Super Scoreboard tonight, reflecting on Scotland's win against Cyprus on Saturday, and of course looking forward to that big one at Hampden tomorrow. Looking forward to that against Spain. Let's go straight back to the phones. 01419511025. William is in Craigend. William, what were you thinking ahead of tomorrow?
How you doing? Good evening, guys. I think Clark should change it up a wee bit. I know he won't, but I think he should go 4-3-3. I think this, and Hugh's already touched on it, this Spain side on the side that won the World Cup, you know, they've not got the Iniestas, they've not got the David Beers, these kind of players, you know. So I think this Spain side are more in a transition. where Clark, I think Clark can take advantage of that because we've got a settled side. You know, but as I say, I think it should go 4-3-3-3 and press them for the front. You know, I think their weakness is their back four. You know, so I don't know what the guys think of that. I know when maybe Clark won't go that way and they maybe stay with the box, but I would stick Jack in front of that back four, put McGregor and McTominay in either side of him, and the three up front for me would be probably Armstrong, Dykes, and obviously McGinn on the other side. So all pressing. So I think that's the way Scotland should go. It should be a, for me, it should be a little in-your-faces performance. Don't let good players get space on the ball and play that way. You know, I don't know what the guys think of that, but I think that's the way the Scotland should go.
Could you see a change of formation tomorrow?
No, I can't see it. I think it's been, you know, Steve Clark's favoured possession, formation as a coach, never mind just as a Scotland manager. I fully expect him to take the same approach tomorrow night. But, you know, I agree with some aspects of what William's saying. I don't want to see a gung-ho approach because a team like Spain can pick you off and really punish you. But I would like to see us have a clear game plan on how we can hurt Spain. And, you know, we've touched on it. I'm not the team they were 10 years ago, but, I mean, you've still got to respect the likes of Alvaro Morata and Dani Olmo and Javi and Rodri and players like that. So I don't think there'll be a change of formation, but I do fully expect that Steve Clark, I think he touched on it in his interview as well, that he's gone into every game as a coach or a player since he was 17 wanting to win and expecting to win. So I think, and that being said, I do think they'll have a game plan to try and hurt Spain.
As you said earlier, you know, you want to see Scotland being as positive as possible. The crowd are looking for that. Not gung-ho, but front foot. Andy said earlier, if we sit back, we'll get picked off eventually. So let's, under those lights, with that crowd, take it to them in a way that is sensible without being irrational. And let's see if it's possible to get that statement result that I was speaking about earlier on, because Stevie Clark, if you examine his time as Scotland manager, it's all very good. He's got the extension to his contract. But that brings a pressure of its own, because if Scotland don't do well in this qualification campaign, people will say, well, why did you extend his contract before the competition had even started? Is it not more the case that you should be doing that after you find out how he does in the qualification campaign? So Stevie Clark's got pressure of his own to handle. And we just need, I think, a result that makes everyone say, incidentally, what a great job he's doing.
Whenever people have this debate about formations, you see people that are against the sort of three at the back, five at the back, because they think it's more defensive than playing with four at the back and essentially two central defenders instead of three. But when you look at the Scotland team on Saturday, you had Andy Robertson at times inside the Cyprus box. You had Kieran Tierney further up the park to the left of them. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's a more defensive setup, does it?
No. I've always said I think a style of play is more important than a formation, and you can take any freeze frame photo within a game when you're in possession and it might look like a 2-3-5 formation, a 4-3-3, a 4-4-2, a 3-5-2. So I think the style is certainly more important, and Scotland have to try and implement their style in the game. And we all know Spain will. They've been a possession based, you know, controlled team for the last sort of two decades, and I think that's not going to change. And I do think we've seen Steve Clark slowly implement his own style in the Scotland squad. I think when he came in, it was a lot more robust, controlled, try to sort of fix what was a leaky Scotland defence at the time. And then I think over the last sort of few months, we've sort of gradually seen a more attacking intent. And now we're pitted against one of the big dogs, 10th in the world, Spain, one of the European giants. So let's see how we do against them.
William, where are your confidence levels ahead of tomorrow?
I'm not pretty confident. I mean, I was at the game. I was at the game for the 3-2 game. I think it was Levine's tenure. I thought Naismith and McGregor obviously had a good night. You know, I think they were pivotal, and I think the goalkeeper will be pivotal tomorrow night. You know, but I just think, I mean, you're playing against Iniesta and players like that, you're coming away with a 3-2, and we were unlucky not to get the draw that night. You know, so I'm thinking a high-scoring draw, and maybe we could nick it, maybe 2-1 or something. I think the end-game management is important to Clark. You know, I think in the modern game and the in-game management and how things are working and how we can change it within the game is important, you know. So I think if he looks at it and it's not working, and his ability to change it is important for me, you know.
He's got a gold star in his jota for in-game management on Saturday, because he brings on McTominay, he scores two goals. I just think, you know, understand that beating Cyprus was what we should be doing, and we did it, and it's job done. Understand that Spain will be an altogether different proposition, but we should not necessarily be quaking in our boots. Let's go and see if by going onto the front foot we can actually get the result that people will talk about for a long time to come, because we're talking about France in 2006 or Denmark that Andy Haldy mentioned. And I began the show by saying Andy wasn't even born when we beat Spain in a competitive match, 1984. 39 years? Let's go and try and rewrite history after 4 decades.
You know, as William says, we won't be coming up against Xavi, Iniesta, David Villa, but Steve Clarke won't be underestimating this Spain team. I think William had said that, you know, the weakest part of Spain's side is their back four, or certainly in defence. You look at the guys that started their game against Norway, two Real Madrid players, one Manchester City player, one Barcelona player. You know, it's still a side full of quality.
Yeah, it's still elite. And I think, you know, the Barcelona player is 18-year-old Alejandro Balde. Watched a few games that he's been involved in. The doubleheader against Man United, and what a prospect he is as well. But I think, I know it's so easy to say it, but when you do look throughout the Spain team, I think height, you know, they're not blessed with a lot of 6'4" monsters in their team. And I think, you know, Hugh won't believe this, but a lot of teams take the approach of a set-piece coach now. Obviously, Oss McPhee's that for Scotland. I think over the last few games, we've seen Scotland be very, very dangerous at set-pieces. You know, John Souter scored from a few. Scott McTominay scored. Lyndon Dykes has scored for set-pieces. And I do think that's going to be a big aspect of the game for Scotland as well. And, you know, I've got a bit of false confidence, I've got to be honest. I'm going to go for one each tomorrow. I think Scotland will get something.
Oh. Go along with that, William.
Well done, man. That's what I like to hear. A wee bit of positivity. I think 2-1, but and maybe 2-1 to Scotland if we can keep them out, you know. But I think we've got a good chance tomorrow night. And I think the way Clark's got the team going and what he's done the last 2 years puts us in a good place. And I think we're ahead of Spain in that regard. I think they're still in transition. I think they're still trying to build a team, you know. So I think we're a couple of years ahead of Spain in that regard, even though they've got better players, you know, if you look at it that way, you know.
I refrain from giving a prediction, because we all know what happens.
Just predict Spain 3-0.
Yeah, just go for an easy Spain win and we can all sleep easy tonight.
That's it then, Spain 2-0.
Michael, good stuff. In terms of starters, William, is there any, who are the guaranteed starters for you for Scotland in this game?
Guaranteed star. So I think McGregor, I don't think you can drop McGregor McGinn, you know, but I didn't think there was a need to play Jack and McGregor against Cyprus. I thought it would have went with a Gilmore or a Ferguson, you know, but I think for this game he needs a Jack. I think he needs a Jack and a Gilmore, he needs a Jack and a McGregor. And with McTominay scoring two goals, I think it's hard to leave him out, you know. So I think that would be my three. Guys, I don't think Dykes, I think Dykes is a starter for me as well, you know. I don't think there's anybody else. I think it probably would have been Adams, but I do think Dykes is the main man for me.
Well, thank you to William. It's now time for this. Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun. For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football. Beat the Pundit time, your chance to take on either Andy Halliday or Hugh Keevans for the bragging rights, and of course for a signed ball as well. Answer as many questions as you can correctly and you could win that. All you need to do is give us a call, 01419511025. Make sure you do that before the news at 7 o'clock and you could be up next. Tackle the headlines. 01419511025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Hugh Keevans and Andy Halliday in the studio with me, Andrew McLean, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. We've been looking back on that Scotland win against Cyprus on Saturday, looking ahead to that big game at Hampden against Spain tomorrow. So we want to hear your calls on those. 0141 951 1025. Maybe you've got something else on your mind, maybe you want to change the topic altogether. We'll hear from you as well on 0141 951 1025, or you can tweet us at ClydeSSB. But first, it's time for this.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Beat the Pundit time, Hugh. How's your form?
Rubbish. I lost on the tiebreak on Friday night, didn't even understand the question, and gave an answer that left the audience not understanding the answer.
Yeah, we did test Andy on that and during the break, and he did a lot better than you did. So
much
we'll see
better,
see if you can bring that form into tonight, Andy, if it's you up next.
I'll do my best. My form's been not too bad.
Right, up is Darren, who's a Celtic fan in Postle. Darren, have you played before?
Yeah, I've played before.
How'd you get on?
I bet Kenny Moore.
Oh, Kenny's decent as well.
There we go. Who would you rather play?
Yeah, I'll take Andy.
There we go. Right. Heads, Andy Halliday. Tails is Hugh Keevans. And it's Hugh Keevans. You don't get your wish. It will be Hugh you are playing against. But yeah, 30 seconds on the clock to answer as many questions as you can. Remember, you can pass if you're struggling. That should help you out. I'm actually told that the Pundits lost 3-2 last week, and we gave out all of our signed balls that we had left, so more had to be ordered in. So the Pundits need to do a lot better this week.
There'll be another one going out the door shortly.
Right, okay, Darren, are you ready?
Yep.
Oh, sorry, we need to make sure that Hugh cannot hear us. There we go. Right, Clyde 2 in Hugh's ear, and ready to go. After Kyogo, who scored the most league goals for Celtic this season?
Abada.
Who's played the most league games for Rangers this season?
Sorry, say again.
Who's played the most league games for Rangers this season?
Pass.
Lauren Shanklin scored his only Scotland goal against which side?
Pass.
Who did Hamilton beat in the final of the SPFL Trust Trophy yesterday?
Yeah.
Which Scottish Premiership player started for Cyprus against Scotland on Saturday?
Pass.
Which team did Ryan Porteous join in January?
Watford.
In what year did Billy Gilmore leave Rangers for Chelsea?
2018.
Okay, right. Hugh, can you hear us?
I can.
Okay, right. Okay, let's get underway. After Kyogo, who scored most league goals for Celtic this season?
Abada.
Who's played the most league games for Rangers this season?
Goldson.
Lorna Shanklin scored his only Scotland goal against which side?
Pass.
Who did Hamilton beat in the final of the SPFL Ray Trust Throwers. Trophy? Which Scottish Premiership player started for Cyprus against Scotland on Saturday?
Gogic.
Which team did Ryan Porteous join in January?
Watford.
In what year did Billy Gilmore leave Rangers for Chelsea?
2019.
Right, okay, Darren, how do you think it went?
I think it's just better.
Okay. Okay, well, we'll go through them. The first one was, after Kyogo, who scored the most league goals for Celtic this season? The correct answer is Lille Abada. So it's 1-1 at that point. Who's played the most league games for Rangers this season?
James Tavernier.
James Tavernier, correct. You both got it wrong, so it stays at 1-1. Lauren Shanklin scored his only Scotland goal against which side? You both got it wrong. Do you know that one?
Faroes.
San Marino.
No, I thought Faroes.
San Marino. So it stays at 1-1. Who did Hamilton beat in the final of the SPFL Trust Trophy yesterday? You both went for Raith Rovers. You both got it right. Which Scottish Premiership player started for Cyprus against Scotland on Saturday? You passed this one, Darren. Alex Gogic. It was. Hugh got it right, so he takes the lead. Which team did Ryan Porteous join in January? You both got Watford, and you both got one final question in. In what year did Billy Gilmore leave Rangers for Chelsea? And you both got it wrong, which means Hugh wins by one.
Oh, well done, man, well done.
All right, Darren, thank you.
Gracious
and
defeat.
Scruffy, but who cares?
A lot more gracious in defeat than some of the others I hear on here, especially Gordon DL. But there we go. That is a win. The Pundit's off to a good start this week, but thank you to Darren for taking part. We'll see see how many signed balls are left in the studio by the time this week is out. Right, 0141 951 1025, if you want to get in touch. Let's hear from some of the players, shall we, from the weekend. Let's Let's go for Callum McGregor, of course, his 50th cap. So let's hear what he made of that performance at the weekend.
Yeah, brilliant. You know, he could not for a better day. It was obviously really important to start the campaign well. 3 points, clean sheet, that's what you want. So we take that and move on to Tuesday.
What does it mean to you personally, getting to that 50th cap? Do you ever envisage that coming?
Obviously, as it was getting closer, you start to think about it. But you know, I said that earlier, to play once for Scotland would have been a dream come true, and that would have been enough. But to make it to 50 today is obviously a special moment for me and my family. You know, something I've worked really hard for, and I'm delighted and really proud.
We all know that you can play endless games a season. You've got another 50 caps in you?
We'll see. Maybe get two over that point. But you know, I just want to play as long as I can and keep trying to help the team if I can.
Yeah, 50 caps is extremely impressive for anyone. I think Callum McGregor didn't even earn his first cap until he was 24. Is that right? In 2017. So the fact that, you know, he's now at 50, he's only 29 at the moment, you'd expect he'll go on to get many more.
The back half of Callum McGregor's career has been nothing short of magnificent for him. You know, to replace a man like Scott Brown, who won as much as he did as Celtic captain, and to replace him in the fashion in which Callum McGregor has done is of tremendous credit to him. His Scotland displays, the 50th cap, a place in the Hall of Fame, he deserves all of it. And just to expand the conversation a little bit, he's got one more game on that dreadful pitch at Hampden to play before Celtic resume what will be a hectic few weeks, beginning with Ross County away on Sunday, and then of course we know about three games against Rangers in quick succession. The pitch is a disgrace, and not just Callum McGregor, Ryan Jackson there as well. The fans will be holding their breath that no one gets hurt as a result of that dodgy pitch.
Yeah, do you think the pitch had much of an impact on the game? It certainly did look slow. It's not as bad as it was in the League Cup semi-finals. That's certainly where the Hampden pitch was at its worst. It looked as if it improved for the League Cup final, but it did cut up quite a bit. It looked quite slow. It did cut up again at the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to say. It certainly didn't look as in dire a state as it did in the League Cup semi-finals, but listen, it's a national stadium pitch. It shouldn't even be in the position it is now, never mind the one in the state it was in at the League Cup semi-final. So I'm not too sure what the reasons are for it. I don't think it's going to be improved much going into tomorrow night, to be fair. I think for this one, it's going to probably suit us more than it will Spain.
Maybe it's just a tactic to stop Spain from trying passing to pass us off the park.
Yeah, quite potentially.
Tell me this, though. You can give the professional's perspective on this. How you've looked at the pitch and you know that it's not the best. How difficult is it to have Falkirk play Inverness Cali in the semi-final of the Scottish Cup on the Saturday and 24 hours later on the same pitch, Celtic versus Rangers?
Very difficult, because for me, I think quite often, you know, when you watch a pitch from the telly or for the stand, it looks better than it actually is when you're on the pitch. And then I think, like Andrew says, it's not till maybe the sort of 50th, 60th minute when it starts to cut up and you see chunks of grass flying, you see players losing their footing, when you realise that, you know, the pitch isn't quite in the state it needs to be. If you fast forward a 90-minute game, potentially 120, to then a day later another big Scottish Cup semi-final, the pitch is going to be in an even worse state from the get-go. And you know, like I said, it's our national cup, it's our main cup, it's a big spectacle for everyone watching Scottish football, and the pitch should be in a much better state than it is.
And Postecoglou and Michael Beale have both had their say on the Hampden pitch, and nothing has been done to improve what's going on. So it can only be that this pitch is going to be a major talking point for the semi-final between Celtic and Rangers.
And I think they have made moves to improve it. It's just that it's maybe not been as easy as they'd hoped.
Yeah, and for me, there's no excuse for that, because, you know, when you talk about the League Cup semi-finals, we watched two games on a really poor pitch, and it certainly affected the standard of the football we're watching. And then 48 hours, we're watching Darvel at home to Aberdeen, who play in the West of Scotland, with the best pitch of the weekend. So I don't think there's any excuse for it, and I know they're making strides to try and make it better. They were trying to make it better for the national setup, and it's improved slightly, and they're going to improve it again for the Scottish Cup semi-finals.
How does it compare to the other sort of Scottish Premiership grass pitches that you've played on this season, I suppose?
To be honest, I think the best pitch we've played on this season has been Ross County's. I think Ross County's always is a good pitch. It's quite firm underneath, it doesn't really cut up as much, and I think, you know, there's probably been issues in quite a few stadiums. I think even Celtic Park, to be honest, at times.
Yeah, Ange Postecoglou talked. It was around the time of the League Cup semi-finals as well, wasn't it, that he brought it up?
Yeah, definitely. But know, Tynecastle's held up quite well throughout the season. But yeah, I think Ross County's always been one that's held. Listen, the biggest improvement of all time has been Motherwell's, because I remember when I first started playing Scottish football, you were dreading that November, December fixture at Fir Park, the way that pitch cut up.
They even sorted out the slope and everything.
Yeah.
Right, let's go back to the phones. 01419511025. I think we were going to speak to Brian, who's just disappeared, but we'll speak to John, who is up next. John's in Clydebank. John, what have you got on your mind?
Hi there, Pat. How are we doing? Yeah, Andy, how sounds like you? How are we doing?
How are you doing, John?
Not too bad, boys. What is basically, I'm just regarding the Scotland and Spain game. I think Spain's worth it taking. I mean, come on, look at Scotland, they were playing under this guy. They're magnificent.
I'll tell you what, John, that line isn't very clear. We'll try and get the producer to clear that up for us.
I'll take John's first sentence. Spain are there for the taking. That sentence should be banned straight away, because you know
maybe it's just optimism, Hugh. You should try it sometime.
Well, maybe it's just disrespectful. you know, you can't just say they're there for the taking. They've just won 3-0 at the weekend as well, same as Scotland. So first of all, I understand optimism, but optimism has to come with common sense, and you can't just say they're there for the taking. It doesn't make sense.
John, I think we've got you back now.
Hello, how you doing?
There we go, hello.
There we go, better signal now. Basically, I think Spain's got the taking, guys. Basically, I think this Scotland team, they're all got great confidence at the moment. I think the main man is going again. He's outstanding.
I think I'm going to have to jump in there, John, because the line isn't too clear, but I got your point there. You were saying that John McGinn is the main man. We have talked about him already, but you know, he is just such an influential player for Scotland. Where does he fit into the game tomorrow night, Andy? Because we've seen him in that role where he's up supporting the striker, he's making runs into the 6-yard box to finish things off. Will he play the same kind of role against Spain?
I hope so, but I think, you know, the beauty of John McGinn is he's got so many attributes. I think, you know, I don't really see a major weakness in his game. I think he's, you know, he's got legs, he's got athleticism, he uses that famous backside very well out of possession. I think in possession he's obviously got the onus to get forward, join attacks, burst into the box and score goals, and that's why he has, you know, had 22 goal involvement since Steve Clarke's got the job. And you know, you look at the next best after that, it's Lyndon Dykes with 10, so it's almost double. So he's certainly been Scotland's talisman, and I think no matter where he's deployed in the game tomorrow night, I think he is probably the first name in any sort of Scotland team sheet, and has been for a couple of seasons now. But I do hope we see him in that more advanced role and being a bit brave and breaking into the box, because he's been a goal threat for us.
You talk about talisman, he's been Steve Clarke's personal talisman, and therefore you don't touch a thing. Just let him play where he is at his best. The potential is always there for a goal. John the caller is from Clydebank. John the player is from Clydebank, and every time he pops up on the telly, my wife still says, is that the wee boy McGinn that lived down the road from us?
Well, let's hear from the man himself.
We've ended the hoodoo of the opening qualification, the opening game of qualification campaigns, and even though I'm being fussy and picky, it's a big 3 points. PTSD from the Euros at that back stick, so thankfully I got that in. In the house, I'm looking up. When I get here, I'm focused on trying to get us to the Euros. No matter who scores, I'm delighted, but honestly, don't mind if I don't get there, but as long as we're helping the team, and the main goal for me and for Scotland is to get to Germany.
Yeah, more goals than James McFadden. He's now chasing the likes of Ali McCoist, Kenny Miller.
Yeah.
You know, these are players that were huge for Scotland, and John McGinn, people will reflect in the future about, you know, his contribution for Scotland, but just simply the fact that he scored nearly as many goals as those players is quite something.
Yeah, I mean, he's two away from Kenny Miller, and I think three or four away from Ali McCoist. Now, Ali McCoist, legendary Scottish footballer. Kenny, you know, the ultimate, the consummate professional. But they're going to get overtaken by John McGinn, because he too is the consummate professional, and he plays an awful lot more international football than they did. I can't help but feel that he'll leapfrog the two of them, and not very long from now. But John, don't call it the back stick. I hate that.
What's wrong with the back stick?
His mother was a school teacher. She'll now be marking his homework very carefully in future. Back post.
I think he's done all right. I think he's done enough to get let off with a with a few words
with a warning. It's a yellow.
Certainly going to let him off if he keeps scoring goals, that's for sure. Like I said earlier, 53 caps, 16 goals, one in every three. And for someone who's only really been playing that advanced role for Scotland over the last sort of campaign or two, it's a remarkable output.
I think Steve Clarke maybe had his tongue in his cheek when he said it after the game, but he was saying, maybe I need to get a bit of credit for, you know, the role I've played John in, and then went on to say afterwards that you know, John deserves so much credit himself. But he is right. It's something that we hadn't really seen from John McGinn before, essentially playing as an attacking midfielder. I think people knew that he could do both sides of the game, but actually the fact that he is up there as a supporting striker a lot of the time, it was a good spot by Steve Clarke.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we talked about formations and style of plays, and I think, you know, certain styles and certain formations suit certain players. And I think with the freedom that John McGinn's got in Steve Clarke's side, I think he's reaping the rewards for it. And I think we've seen a huge upturn in Scottish international form from a lot of players, but I don't think no more so than that man John McGinn, that's for sure.
Let's go back to the phones. Laurie is in Denniston. Laurie, what have you got for us tonight?
Hey, panel, good evening. Thank you for taking my call. My thoughts on the game tomorrow are that historically Spain has always been a team that has played possession-based football, and I would doubt that that is likely to change tomorrow. In fact, I'll boldly predict, before a ball is kicked in earnest tomorrow, that Spain will probably keep the ball anywhere between 70-80% of the time. Now, if that's the case, then obviously it means that if we have limited opportunities, we have to make the most of them. And I think that could best be served if we played when we get the ball, we're able to break with speed going forward. I wouldn't play Lyndon Dykes tomorrow. I know he's a big physical guy. He's 100% tall. But he's glacial-like in his movements without being unkind to him. I would go for Che Adams and Jacob Brown.
Well, Che Adams is out the squad, Laurie, so he can't play.
Thanks for enlightening me. I wasn't aware of that, you know. But certainly Jacob Brown and John McGinn, of course, as a utility forward, breaking from midfield. So I think it's vitally important that when we do get the ball, and I think that's likely to be very limited, we're able to make the most of the few opportunities that present themselves. The panel's thoughts?
It stands to reason that in all probability Spain will have more of the ball than us. I would persevere with Dykes. I think he can just be a nuisance, sufficient to make space for others. If not, he occasionally scores the, what was it, 10 goals did you say, Andy?
Who, sorry?
Dykes.
10 goal involvements.
Yeah, 10 goal involvements. Well, you know, I don't think, you know, I think Laurie's placing an awful lot of trust in Jacob Brown, and we simply don't know his capabilities.
With Laurie talking about pace and getting up the park, how crucial will Andy Robertson and whether it's Aaron Hickey or potentially Nathan Patterson be on the other side in doing that?
That was going to be my point. I think when you're talking about, you know, the limited possession that Scotland might have, and you're talking about breaking at pace and who can hurt Scotland, I think a big onus is on the wing-backs to do that. And, you know, if you do have a Lyndon Dykes up there, it's then his job to hold the play up a sufficient amount of time to get your wing-backs involved. So the beauty of football is, Laurie, you only need 1% to score a goal. So, you know, whatever percentage of possession that Scotland may have, they certainly need to make it count.
Well, thank you to Laurie. 01419511025. We'll hear from you next, and also we'll get a full-time teaser up and running as well.
Taking your calls on Scottish football. 01419511025. This is Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Andy Halliday and Hugh Keevans in the studio tonight, and they are about to take on the full-time teaser. I hope we are going to speak to a cup-winning manager as well in a few minutes as well. But let's get this full-time teaser up and running. Hugh and Andy, can you name the 9 Scotland players who have exactly 1 Scotland cap under Steve Clarke? So the caveat to that is they could have been capped more than once, but they've only won 1 cap under Steve Clarke, and that's it.
Eamon Brophy.
Correct. Oof. Eamon Brophy got his cap against Cyprus in Steve Clarke's first game.
Anthony Ralston?
No.
Angus Gunn.
Correct. There we go. A nice easy one. Angus Gunn. So that's 2 of 9. I'll give you one more guess each.
Stuart Finlay.
Stuart Findlay is a very good shout. Played against San Marino in October 2019.
Go on then, Andy.
That's all right, we'll leave it there. We'll leave it there. That's a good start. You've got 3 of 9. Can you name 9 Scotland players who have exactly 1 Scotland cap under Steve Clarke? Feel free to play along at home at Clyde SSB as well. But let's go back to the phones, because I'm delighted to say we are joined by Hamilton manager John Rankin. John, how are you?
Andrew, I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm all good, all good. Good to hear from you. First of all, congratulations on your win yesterday.
Thank you very much. It was, we done it the hard way, let's just say that. 3 substitutes before half time, and then obviously the sending off in the second half.
Yeah, talk us through it. I mean, what was going through your mind? I think it was at 55 minutes you'd gone down to 10 men.
Yeah, well, obviously the game starts and you've got a game plan in your head, and then your main striker for the day goes off injured, and your winger's got a knock as well, but he's trying to get through it, so that's 2 stoppages gone, have to take both off after 20 minutes, which is always difficult. So the game plan kind of goes out the window. You can't really prepare for these things, and then obviously we lose Matthew Shields just before half time. Had a knock on his knee, but luckily enough he managed to get through at half time, so we weren't able to stop the game again, so therefore we're allowed another sub. And fortunately, when Dan gets sent off, we still had one sub up our sleeve, which was Brian Easton, who obviously won the Scottish Cup with St Johnstone, an experienced defender, and I thought the game at that time would suit him. And it'd be fair, Easton came on. He had a new baby. He's a father for the first time last week. And then obviously coming on yesterday and leading us to silverware was great for him.
Yeah, not a bad week at all. How about for you as well? Just what was that feeling like for yourself when that full-time whistle went?
Listen, I've played in 3 finals and never won one, and I think I enjoyed playing more than what I did yesterday. It was nerve wracking. We went through every emotion possible, but at the end of the day we got the result that we were looking for. It was massive. Obviously our league position at the moment is not great, and we're looking for a bit of momentum from the cup to bring us through. So I was absolutely delighted for the players yesterday. They gave everything, and at times for the last 40 minutes it was backs to the wall. Obviously we had 6 minutes injury time in the first half and another 4 in the second half, so the fitness levels were good, and I'm absolutely delighted for them.
I suppose, is that the type of thing you talk about, the league position that you hope will really kick you on with not too long left of the campaign?
Yeah, it has before. We've used the cup as a bounce, basically. We've got a good results in cup ties, and then it's kicked us on in the league. So coming off the back of obviously lifting the trophy yesterday, we're hoping it can give us a kick start. With 8 games to go, we now face a really tough period. Actually, we are Saturday, Tuesday for the next 3 weeks, so at this time of the season it's difficult, especially when we don't carry a big squad as it is, but at this stage of the season when you are having really meaningful fixtures, then you've got a chance to continue a run or bounce back pretty quickly.
I did see your comments in your post-match interview. Did you get much sleep last night?
I slept on the couch. My wife and kids were at the game, obviously. So I made a tongue-in-cheek comment, and obviously it's went viral, so I was in the bad books for a wee bit, but luckily Maria's okay now.
I think, John, it might be a case of a fertile imagination.
Do you know what I was really impressed with? I was really impressed with my maths. How that came off the top of my head so quickly, I haven't got a clue, but we managed to get there.
But that league that you're in, the Championship, you know, you've got a game in hand, or is it 2 games in hand over Arbroath?
We've got a game in hand over Arbroath and 2 games in hand over Cove.
And then you look at the Arbroath Queen's Park game and Oney Coyle side lose 1-0 to Arbroath. Your league makes no sense at times.
It doesn't, no, but that's the Championship. Obviously, anyone can beat anyone in a day, and that makes it an exciting league for me. I've always said it, even when I played in the Premier League, I think the Championship's the most exciting. Anyone can win it, and anyone can find themselves at the bottom after a bad run of results. But this season, I think we've went to Inverness, when Inverness were at the top, probably about October time, and we beat them, and we were near the bottom at the time. And that just shows you anyone at the bottom can beat anybody at the top, as you've seen it on Friday night again with Arbroath beating Queen's Park. And although the neutral's probably surprised, when you're involved in the league, nothing surprises you.
Rance, congratulations, mate. The guys have touched on it. Obviously, 3-4 substitutions down to 10 men. How much did you have to thank your goalkeeper, Ryan Fulton? What a performance he put in.
Thanks, Andy. I appreciate that. No, listen, Fulton, I say it all the time. Fulton has been absolutely brilliant for us this season. And at times, I'm not exaggerating when I'm saying he's been keeping the score down. We've took some really rough defeats with Morton and again at Queen's Park early in the season. But since the turn of the year, we've added to the squad. We've got some real strength and real character. But behind him, I think we've got, as I said, the best goalkeeper in the league. And yesterday, he was called upon 3 and 4 times the second half, and his saves are outstanding. When he comes from off the line and he's got those big arms that can stretch, and he really takes the pressure off. I was delighted for him yesterday, but the defence in front of him had a tough shift the second half. And listen, the players gave us everything, so I'm absolutely delighted for him.
On a purely personal level, the crowd at New Douglas Park have once or twice told you where to go. How much did it mean to you to give them a trophy yesterday?
Yeah, well, the supporters are everything behind the club. Our club's a community club. It's based around its academy, trying to bring youth players through. So that's always going to be the case in the heart of the club. They have told me where to go a few times, sure, but I don't get caught up in that. I try to put that to one side. And there has to be a clear vision, and it's a case of, can we keep our message to the players consistent? Can we be clear? And can we make that constant where we're not giving them any breathing space? We've got a lot of young players. We're still learning the game, as am I, as a young manager. But what we have to do is we have to stay together. And I think everyone's seen that yesterday. In the second half, we overcame adversity. We were struggling at times, but everyone was pulling together. So, yeah, the comments, they'll always happen. It doesn't matter what level you're at, but it's having a strong belief in what you're doing and it being the right thing to continue.
Brilliant, John. Thanks for taking the time. Well done again.
Cheers, guys. Thank
well
you.
Done,
well done, mate.
That was, of course, Hamilton boss, cup winning, SPFL Trust Trophy winning boss, John Rankin there. It's one of these competitions that I think clubs of, or sort of fans of bigger clubs will maybe turn their nose up at. But for a club like Hamilton, who don't win many trophies, it's absolutely massive for the fan base, for the players, for John.
That's why I said when we were going over the highlights of the weekend, this is a game for the people. And those fans, they blow hot and cold. Many an Aki's manager had been given the treatment that John Rankin got earlier in the year. But he gave them an excuse to have a right good Sunday night. You always have to take these moments, because the bad moments will find you in football. You don't need to go looking for them. They'll find you. So you might as well take your successes like that in the best manner possible.
I'll tell you what, I'm glad that neither of you two were listening towards the end of last week, because I've had a text from Gordon DL and also seen a tweet that apparently this exact teaser was used on Thursday night last week.
Wait, all of them?
The full-time teaser, apparently so, yeah.
Well, on Thursday night I was at St Andrews Sporting Club for the boxing, so I have my excuse.
You know what, neither of you were listening, so that's all good, it's fine. We'll continue on. And we'll get to that a bit later on. Let's go back to the phones. George is in Southampton. George, what are you thinking tonight? What's on your mind?
Good evening, panel. Just to correct you on your first point, I'm back in Glasgow, so I'm calling from my hometown.
There you go. Yeah, you going to the game tomorrow, George?
No, unfortunately not, because I'm working as a social worker, so I'll be listening to the game. I've just got one question, and it was something that one of the callers had pointed out about Jacob Brown. I'm not sure, playing Jacob Brown against Spain is a good idea.
Why not?
Well, it's lack of, international experience kind of concerns me a bit. I would rather the Lauren Shanklin played instead of Jacob Brown, because he's experienced with the Scotland squad, he's on a bit of form, and if Lyndon Dykes weren't fit enough, he would be my ideal replacement. The other point I wanted to make,
we'll take that first, George, and I'll let you come back in. George talking about Jacob Brown not being experienced enough. I'm not saying he is going to start or he's not going to start, but you mentioned earlier about the trust Steve Clarke has in his players, and the fact that Jacob Brown has been in numerous squad shows that Steve Clarke trusts him to some extent, enough to throw him in against Spain.
No, not for me. And you know, like you said, I touched on it earlier. I think you look at a number of players. You know, Stephen O'Donnell's came under a lot of criticism, some fair, some unfair. But Steve Clarke was that one sort of constant that stuck by him, and then he reaps the rewards of England performance and some of his performances in the Euros. I think we've seen it with other players. Grant Hanley's came under some pressure at times as well, and I think that quite often he's stuck loyal to players that have done well for him in big games. And you know, Lyndon Dykes has done that, so I don't think there's any doubt for me that Lyndon Dykes will come back in the starting 11 tomorrow.
I'm asking someone that is your teammate, so I think I know what the answer is going to be, but a deserved call up for Lauren Shankland.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and I suppose I'm going to be slightly biased, but I was surprised not to see him in the original squad. You know, maybe because he had that sort of hamstring injury, missed a couple of games that came into play, but I think it's certainly a Scotland's benefit that he's been called up on now. And you know, I've touched on it, how good and how strong Scotland's squad is just now, so the fact that a 21 goal striker couldn't get in the first place just shows how strong we are at the moment.
Yeah, that's, it's a good point, because you know, someone like Shea Adams dropping out, who starts the game, is the one that Steve Clarke has picked to start the game on Saturday. He goes out, but Lauren Shankland of course is very capable. He's scored for Scotland already, has plenty of goals for Hearts.
I'd take him in preference to Jacob Brown if it comes to that, but I believe we'll start with Lyndon Dykes, and the changes will be minimal from the game against Cyprus.
George, what was your other point you were going to make?
Yeah, my last point was I'd quite like to, you know, see Billy Gilmour get some game time on Tuesday. I mean, obviously, we've got a strong midfield, and he could be like a player that can come in the last 15-20 minutes to give that extra energy. I know he's not been given much of a chance at Brighton, but we all know his potential when it comes to playing for Scotland, and he's got a good partnership with Nathan Patterson as well, so he can add some extra impetus in that midfield as the game's, you know, nearing the last 20 minutes. So I'd quite like to see Billy Gilmour get a chance, because I think he was on the subs bench against Cyprus.
Yep. He's so far out of things at the moment, Billy Gilmour.
He wasn't really in things though when he started at Wembley and put in a man of the match display against England. I'm not saying he's going to get thrown in, but he wasn't really playing domestic football at the time, and went in and did fantastically well.
You know, George is looking into the future here. You know, the last 15 minutes, Billy Gilmour might be the last thing we need for the last 15 minutes. We'll need to see how the game is progressing. I just think that Billy Gilmour, he needs to think again with regard to his club career, because Norwich didn't work out, Brighton isn't working out, and he needs a fresh impetus somewhere.
Steve Clarke said something interesting at the start of this camp that kind of stuck with me, and he said that there's maybe some players in this squad that he's picked that he's potentially been too loyal towards, but has picked them because he sees them having a big future at international level. You would expect that Billy Gilmour is one of the ones he was talking about.
Yeah, and one thing we will say is, you know, although it's not been quite happening for him over the last couple of years, I think we've all seen his potential, and Steve Clarke will see that better than anyone when he's in the squads and he's training day in, day out. And listen, it just shows it's another great option for Steve Clarke, another great option for Scotland, because he's a boy with bags of ability. We're probably yet to see it on a consistent basis at club level, and I think that is the next step for him. He needs a real run of games at domestic football to really kick on and start to show that potential that we all see on a regular basis. But I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that Billy Gilmour is going to be a massive player for Scotland over the next decade.
Well, thank you to George. Let's get back to the full-time teaser that definitely wasn't used last Thursday as well, and none of us heard of it. Can you name the 9 Scotland players who have exactly 1 Scotland cap under Steve Clarke? Look, it's a different question, because Angus Gunn's been added to that list since then. So you've got him, you've got Stuart Finlay, and you've got Eamon Brophy. You have 6 more to get.
I mentioned him earlier, and I'm not sure if he's got 0, 1 or 2, but Lewis Ferguson?
No. Lewis Ferguson has been capped more than once
by Steve Patterson.
Nathan Patterson's played loads for Scotland.
Come on, you.
One cap.
I won't beat the pundit. Shut up.
Kevin Nisbet.
No.
No. I'm toiling then. Greg Taylor.
Greg Taylor. No.
Greg Taylor's got lots of caps for Scotland. What are you talking about?
Is he?
He has played a few times under Steve Clarke, yeah.
Come on, Andy. Again, this guy could have a few under Steve Clarke, but I can only really remember the one because it was the first one he came back and played, and I've got to go with John Souter.
John Souter, no.
Oh, I'm struggling then.
Right, okay, I will get more answers from you after the break. If you want to give us a call, 01419511025.
Number one for football in Glasgow and the West. 01419511025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Andy Halliday and Hugh Keevans with me, Andrew McLean, in the final part of tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. 01419511025. If you want to get in touch, a bit of work to be done on this teaser, which people have kindly pointed out to us was also used last Thursday as well. But you know what? We'll power through because neither of you heard it. Thanks for listening to the show, guys.
And we've proved that, that's for sure.
I was out of the box and I've told you that twice now.
Can you name the nine Scotland players who have exactly one cap under Steve Clarke? So you have Angus Gunn, you've got Stuart Finlay, and you've got Eamon Brophy. Six to get.
Alan Campbell.
Alan Campbell, yes, correct. He got his cap against Armenia.
John McLaughlin.
John McLaughlin, yes, the only goalkeeper on the list. That is, what, four more to get? I'll take another answer from you each.
Lewis Morgan?
Lewis Morgan, no. Actually, three more to get. Yeah.
Three more.
Oh, no, four. Sorry. Four more to get.
Mark McNulty?
No. He was capped under McLeish, a couple of caps at the end of McLeish's tenure.
Gary Mackay-Steven?
No.
Oh, you.
Right.
You're getting on my nerves now. You're
chucking Kenny Dalglish as well.
Think defenders. And we'll go to Graham in the East End. Graham, big game tomorrow night. What are you thinking ahead of it?
That's probably the best question you could ask. Good evening, panel.
Hi, Graham.
Massive game tomorrow. And there's a few points. So I'll try and start at the beginning and then get to the end. I know that sounds a bit crazy, but
it actually sounds very logical, Graham, to be honest.
Well, okay, thanks for that. I did go to school. So I spoke to the producer, and it's to do with basically the back line or the back low line for the Scotland, and obviously the goalkeeping situation. I think Q touched on it the other night. I can't remember what night that was. I think Kenny Miller said the exact same. I mean, you've got three untried goalkeepers. So let me fast forward and I'll come back to that. Craig Gordon was your number one, and Marshall was probably his number two. So are we that bad in an element of football with grassroots? And I remember this going back to Hampden when the Dutch guy was looking after the Scotland setup. I can't remember his name. If it's a life of me right now. But bouncing back, it might sound a wee bit inconsolable to a certain person, but in this gun, is he the answer for the Scotland setup? I mean, that's my first.
Well, we
I mean, Steve Clarke seems to think so anyway. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, we were once really well off in that department, and then Alan McGregor retired from international football. Craig Gordon had his awful injury, and David Marshall retired from international football as well. So we are back to the drawing board on that one. And I think that Steve Clarke wanted to believe that Angus Gunn could be the man to hold down the job for the foreseeable future. He's had one game, kept a clean sheet. We don't need to overthink this. Angus Gunn goes in to play against Spain tomorrow night. It's as simple as that. And clearly Angus Gunn has the confidence of the manager, a level of confidence that, with respect to them, neither Liam Kelly nor Xander Clarke have. Otherwise, they would have been in before now. So don't overthink it. Angus Gunn plays tomorrow.
Graham?
No, I'm not overthinking it, Hugh. I think you're mismanaging this. I am thinking it because it's my team. I'm Scotland born and bred, you know, and I will follow my nation, you know, till my heart dies. But my point being is, which I truly, with all respect, I think you've missed, is Mr. Gunn the next answer? Because where's the grassroots? Where's the guy behind, you know, your Craig Gordons and your Marshalls and your Alan McGregors? We should touch on this here, 100%, 110%. Good. Andy Gorham. I can keep going.
I wonder if part of this is just how lucky Scotland have been over the last few years when it comes to goalkeepers, because we have had some top players in that position: Craig Gordon, David Marshall, Alan McGregor. And, you know, I think Graeme's point is that he just doesn't feel the options at the moment maybe stack up to those players. They had big, I was going to say boots or gloves to fill, certainly. But Angus Gunn is the man that Steve Clarke appears to have chosen to take over.
I agree with Graeme's point, though, and I take it into isolation, because I don't think he's meaning just the goalkeeping scenario, because you quite rightly pointed out some of the goalkeepers we've had, it's probably been our strongest department as a national side for at least a decade anyway. But, you know, I seen the stat the other week about the number of Scottish players that are playing domestically in Scottish football. I think you look at Celtic squad for how strong it is, you look at Rangers squad for how strong it is, there's not a lot of Scottish internationals or Scottish young players in there. You know, even my own club, Hearts, Hibs. I think right now I don't see a lot of young, exciting Scottish players coming through. And listen, there may be times for that in academies up and down the country, but I'm a big believer in the development of Scottish football, and I see a lot of teams, a lot of clubs with, you know, players at under 14, under 15, under 16 levels where you think they've got a big future in the game, and then when it comes to the ages of 18, 19, 20, just don't quite reach the heights that we want and what we expect. So I do worry about that. I do worry about that myself.
While the goalkeeping pool has diminished with the loss of David Marshall, McGregor and Gordon, at the same time, we've produced some of the best fullbacks we've ever had in Hickey, Robertson, Tierney, Nathan Patterson.
Josh Boyd coming through as well.
Yeah, in Serie A. These things happen. We can't get an out-and-out Scottish centre-forward to save our lives. But at the same time, clubs like Celtic and Rangers are involved in trying to keep tens of thousands of people happy and qualify for the Champions League and make money. So if your top striker at one club happens to be Japanese and your top striker at another club is a Colombian, then that's just the way it is. We are not producing the players. Look at our under-21 team. Very poor. We've had another going over from Wales in midweek in a friendly.
3-0 yesterday it was, actually. And then it was a 3-2 defeat to Sweden on Thursday. Look, this is the type of topic that you wish would come up earlier on the show, because we've only got a few minutes left. I think there's definitely time for that type of discussion at more length in the future, certainly, Graeme. Okay. It's an interesting point. What was your other point that you wanted to make?
Basically, just Andy stole my thunder. There's nobody coming through. I don't mean there's nobody coming through. I'm sure there is people coming through, like you touched on, your Nathan Parsons, your Billy Gilmores, etc., etc. Came back to grassroots, and Andy's a professional. He played for my club, the love of my life, Rangers. You know, he's with the bad team, the New Hearts, so the other Rangers. I wee joke. He touched base on, as I say, stole my thunder. There's nothing coming through. I can't. My young cousin plays for under-17s at Rangers, Steve McLean. So I don't remember the last conversation I had with him. There's this new striker coming involved, or this new defenders coming involved, with Andy's point of view. I just think the grassroots thing, and I'll leave this with the panel, I just think the grassroots, as Andy said, the grassroots thing, it's not progressing the way it should.
They come through, and then, like Ben Doak, Liverpool get them at the age of 16. And by the time he's 17, he's appearing periodically in Liverpool's first team. Liam Morrison was coming through at Celtic, and now he plays in the Bundesliga. That's what happens. They are coming through. The clubs can't hold on to them.
Yeah, a lot of that is to do with sort of Brexit rules and the fact that bigger clubs are now looking within the UK, the English clubs looking at young players within the UK. That is certainly an interesting discussion. Thank you to Graeme. I'm sure we'll get into that in a bit more detail, but that's That's time, essentially. We've got to get work on this teaser. Can you name the nine Scotland players who have exactly one cap under Steve Clarke? You've got Angus Gunn, Alan Campbell, Stuart Finlay, John McLaughlin, Eamon Brophy.
I think I've got two, and then I'm going to need some clues.
Okay.
Paul Hanlon.
Paul Hanlon, yes.
And Barry Douglas?
No. Oh, but think know. Paul Hanlon and another Hibs.
Lewis Stevens?
Player used to play for Hibs. Oh. Paul?
McGinn?
Yes, Paul McGinn. Two more to get. One is a fullback who was at Aberdeen. Moved down south, topical from what we were talking about. Youngster.
Oh, Ramsey.
Calvin Ramsey. And finally, a teammate of yours, Andy Halliday.
Oh, you're joking.
Need to get it. We're running out of time. It's Stephen Kingsley. Thank you for all your calls and all your tweets. Thank you to Andy Halliday and to Hugh Keevans. Stick around because Callum Gallagher is up next.
At Audi Columbus, luxury meets convenience. Family owned since 1897, we've built our reputation on trust, transparency, and innovation. Browse our selection online and complete your purchase from home. Then simply stop by to pick up your keys.
Drive home a new 2025 Audi Q5 for $559 for 39 months with $49.99 due at signing.
The next generation shops online. Experience the future with us at AudiColumbus.com. Buyers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.
See dealer for details. Offer ends 4/30/26.